Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
You know, it's funny to think as I start to, you know, dashing around my keyboard and my mouse, and I'm throwing things together at the last minute here because I'm always looking for, you know, the latest, greatest stories and things that are going on. You know, with one click of the mouse, just one wrong click, and I shut the whole show off. So this is where Gene's like, what did you just say, Greg? You know, but it's just one of those things that you never know exactly what's going to happen here. We've got a lot of stuff going on. We're changing our schedules around a little bit for next week. Yesterday was too hectic. And I really like to give people a chance to talk. And I don't believe in compressing and having these strict time limits, where people don't get a chance to really express themselves. And so, well, I got some ideas. Anyway, so we're going to work on that. But if yesterday seemed a little hectic, it was. It was too crazy. Gene, what do you think?
Yeah, a lot going on. And I just wanted to say, just to the listeners, I just want to apologize because when I got on at first, I started telling people about letting other people talk and listen. And I feel when I was talking with Shelby, or Shelby was talking, because of the lag in the phone, mm-hmm. I was cutting her off. And so it's kind of like I just have to learn how to, just watch that. But also that wasn't the only reason sometimes, you know, and so it's like I'm a work in progress too, but interesting. Yeah, and just the second hour was fabulous. And I know from my own experience, I mean, not just within my family, people I know, mm-hmm. how the court system can really, one, it depends on your lawyer, and two, it really depends even where you're living. It's just very interesting, but very sad to think that, and we know it happens all the time, but this is people's lives at stake and mm-hmm. how they're manipulated by people for their best interests. And that's really horrible.
Well, it's almost not worth getting married anymore. In fact, I thought of that before I actually did it. I don't know what happened to me. I think somehow I went through a brainwash reversal personality change. I ended up getting married and doing all kinds of things I never thought I'd do. So I don't know if it was like pre-programmed into my DNA or something. But I had long believed, you know, all through my 20s. And in fact, now for the rest of my life, that it's just not worth it, because the potential, especially for guys, of losing everything. You lose your kids, you know, if a lot of times, the mom gets the kids, and which means the kids need a place to live. So she gets the house, and then she gets child support, and she doesn't have to account to the father where the money's spent. He just has to pay it. And it's better now. It's a lot better than it used to be. But there were movies, classic movies made out. I think Kramer versus Kramer was one, and there were other films too about divorced dads and what a horrible situation it was. And now the courts have gone from, you know, victimizing men to victimizing pretty much everybody. You know, and they victimize the kids especially. I mean, kids are stolen, kids are trafficked, kids are thrown into foster care. They pick the worst possible parent, you know, and give the kids to that parent specifically to create conflict in the good parent so they'll keep going back to court, which generates more money. It's a very dangerous place, and there's really no accountability. We've got a bill. And in fact, Michael Volpe was our guest yesterday. He started one a while back. I keep, asking him to kind of finish it, where he was charging the family courts with like a RICO situation. And so they're guilty of racketeering. They have predetermined outcomes. They all work together. It's a conspiracy to maintain conflict and generate money. And the guidance folks are in on it. The Child Protective Services is in on it. They're not, you know, properly qualified in a lot of cases. You know, the judges are the worst possible judges. They don't want to be there. They'd rather have, you know, nice glorified criminal cases. You know, they all want to be, you know, O.J. Simpson's judge. You know, and so you've got this horrible situation, which is why we spend a lot of time on family law, because it is vastly underreported, not as much as it used to be, you know, according to Michael, which is good. But I'm going to have Angel Law back fairly soon here, probably in the next couple of weeks, to go more into the actual legal stuff. You know, Michael knows the case is cold. In fact, he almost I have to slow him down because he knows so much about these cases in intimate detail. I get lost. I figure if I'm getting lost, then, you know, maybe that's going to go through too. But he's such a wealth of information. And Angel Law covers more of the legal aspects. So we're going to have her back too. But it's a critical problem. I mean, it's awful what goes on in family court. Anybody who's been through it, and most people,
it really is,
you know,
yeah,
are going to have some experience with family court, you know, either as children, right, or divorced parents or something. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, and it seems like if you have the money, that's all that matters, because those are the ones that can unfortunately buy the court system. You say, no, it doesn't happen. It happens. But then I've seen it.
Well, two sides to that.
Where someone came into court, yeah, because she didn't want a lawyer, and she got everything from the father of her child, which I thought was horrific too. And that don't make any sense, because bottom line, if someone is just using you for your money, you know, the court should do a better job of,
right,
I think, of, and I don't know if they're just over, you know, the people that are there just over, you know, overwhelmed by what's going on. I don't know, but it doesn't take much to be able to see someone at face value and know what's going on besides,
yep,
what they're saying. Some people can say a good story and it's so far from the truth. Talk to the kids. You don't have to,
yeah,
have the parents there. In fact, don't have the parents there.
No, I think that, it's not that the courts are so much overwhelmed. I think that the courts overwhelm everybody in the system. And it's by design. It's like the people that know the rules and the people that don't know the rules. It's like Trump going to Washington, not knowing the rules and being sort of the victim of everybody who's been there, established, have little kingdoms, and away they go, as opposed to a Hillary who knew all the rules because she helped make them up. You know, so there's very different ways of doing that. I'm expecting David Jones to call. Normally he checks in here Wednesdays, but sometimes he gets tied up with stuff, as we all do. But hopefully he'll get a chance to drop in here pretty quickly. If not, I've got this is Wednesday. Wednesday used to be for, you know, election news and vaccine news. And I've got a bunch of stories like that, but I've got a particular one, which I think I might get started now, give people a chance to think about this, because this is the top story of the day. One thing I learned about doing this show is that start with your biggest story, because as you work your way through, if you save it for the end, you never get there. It just doesn't work. So this is something that actually came to me from Jonathan Mosley, who's our legal expert, criminal defense attorney. He is – oh, there's David now. Okay, so fine. So I'll hold off on the story. But if you want to look this up before we get to it, it's from the website defendingtherepublic.org. And the magazine article, The Untold Election Case That Should Have Stopped the Coup, Why Nancy Pelosi Had to Hurry on January 6th. And it's by Sidney Powell. Now, I actually met Sidney Powell. Gene, I don't know if I've told you this story, but I met Sidney Powell at I have so many different columns here or so many different, you know, places to arrange. Here's how I do it. If you've ever seen the bottom of a computer, right? You've got all these places for articles. I use the email ones because they're like nice little dividers. So I kind of section things up with my emails that are outbound. I've got like six of them right now ready to go or in process. And so that's how I kind of divide things up. It's really pretty interesting. But anyway, that Sidney Powell, I met her because she needed help carrying T-shirts, and she's there struggling. I didn't know this woman. I didn't know anything about her. I just see that this tall woman who's, you know, trying to carry too much stuff, and it's like, hey, can I help you? Like, yeah, grab these. Okay. You know, I said, who are you? I'm Sidney Powell. Okay, who are you? This is how the conversation went. I didn't know who she was. You know, this is back 2018. I'm new to this whole thing, she gave me her card, and of course, nobody knew who she was at this point. You know, come to find out as soon as she gets on the news, I'm like, I know who that is. I carried her T-shirts. So I'm hoping to get her back on the show and tell her that story, which I think is kind of cool. Gene, before we get to Dave, which I'm going to get in just a second here, do you remember meeting anybody famous or anybody who's soon to be famous or anything of that nature?
No, not really.
Oh, we got to improve that. We got to get you to the CPAC conference. In fact, I want everybody to come to the CPAC conference so that we can all meet. We've got like 20 of us involved in this thing now, so it's pretty crazy. All right, let's bring on Dave. Let's give him a round of applause here. There we go. Let's start that. There we go. All right. Dave Jones is co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers, and they are sponsoring the reports that I'm doing. In fact, I had a new one out yesterday on Federalist Paper number 5. As I go through the founding documents, and I've made a YouTube channel of this so people can actually get a hold of these reports anytime they want. And I'm getting them shorter, Dave. 8 minutes was too long. I'm trying to keep them around 5 or 6. But this last one on the Federalist 5, you know, I think it's the last one by John Jay, the incompetent elitist snob who thought that, like I say, you read it, he reads like a monarchist. Well, Queen Anne said this, and we can unify England. And, well, I'll play it later. But it's just fascinating how that goes. So, Dave, how are you? What's going on?
Well, I'm doing well. Sorry about being a few minutes late. It has been
That's okay.
a crazy
Yeah. Well, I mean, you never have to worry about being a little bit late or anything like that. In fact, if you're busy and you can't call, that's perfectly fine too, because I always have stuff. I mean, I have enough to talk for 2 hours all by myself. And so at least probably like course of 3 hours, which I don't want to do, but you know, but I understand things happen and you stay as long as you want. So, you know, we're pretty informal around here, and that's wonderful, the ability to have that. So we're not restricted like the, you know, you miss your 2 minutes on a major show. That's it. They've already gone to a commercial break and they've got, you know, Biff's used cars, you know, being advertised, and you're out of luck. But not here. We're a little bit more able to do things. So anyway, let's start. You should probably tell people what Santa Rosa Volunteers is and what you guys are working on. You know, time for a shameless plug and contact information. And then, of course, I have, you know, many issues to talk with you about. We'll see. We'll see where we can get this morning.
Right. So what we try to accomplish, our mission at Santa Rosa Volunteers is turning our local communities, starting with the city of Milton and then moving into Santa Rosa County, to kind of the beacon of constitutionality and freedom for the country. So we want to be the model for everybody else to try to achieve what we have. So that's the goal that we constantly work towards.
You know, and that's – go ahead, yeah. Keep going.
So the Arise Facebook page or Arise Patriots Facebook page, we do a lot of work there. We release all the information of our current events there. And we've also got the SRV1776.com, our website. It's still pretty plain right now. We're working with the computer IT guys to try to get that a little bit more user-friendly, a little bit more content there.
Yeah, that's always a struggle. I have a new webmaster, too, so maybe we can talk off air if you want to share. He's really good. You know, we've got our Write Your Laws website is vastly improving, you know, by the day. And so a good webmaster can make your organization so much more accessible to people. So that is really critical. This is the information age. I mean, we're, you know, the information superhighway is every bit, if not more important these days than the, you know, the interstate, you know, superhighways were of old that connected people. So just think of the internet as a big transit highway system, except a whole lot more and a whole lot faster. It's fascinating. I just want to let folks know that what David has allowed me to do is expand my horizons as well. And we've both come to the same conclusion that our little county here, Santa Rosa County, Florida, and Milton and the historic district and the wonderful things going on here, we intend to be the model of freedom for the country. Okay, and that's not an idle boast. We're not just, you know, giving you a little propaganda speech here, but we're actually backing it up with legislation and the practices that we're doing and the things that we believe in. And I think we can do it here because of the people that are here. You've got a great concentration of freedom-loving, patriotic, you know, Americans, a lot of veterans, a lot of active duty military, but that's not the only criteria, but just the people that have the original spirit that brought this country about are here in this area. And we're not going to have it watered down by a bunch of Afghani goat herders. We're not going to have it watered down by a bunch of, you know, illegal aliens crossing our border just because Biden wants more Democrats, wants more illegal votes. Mm-hmm. We're not going to let that happen. And one of the biggest ways I think that we can stop that, and David's made this, you know, I want to ask the lobbying effort here, is the idea that we've got a bill. Okay, it's a damn good bill, I think, too. It's called the Illegal Alien Free Zone. So in other words, the opposite of a sanctuary city. Where they break the law to allow illegal aliens to stay, we're doing just the opposite. We're enforcing the laws, making it impossible for illegal aliens to be here in Santa Rosa County. And you can find it on writeyourlaws.com. I think in the process of our new webmaster doing, you know, going over and fixing things, that particular bill, the original link, doesn't work. So if you ever get a thing that says, sorry, that page doesn't exist, go to the main page, writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. Go to the original page, writeyourlaws.com, and you will find the bill, and that link does work. So I've got that all fixed up. And Dave, that works for you too. If anybody says, I can't find the page, you know, well, they probably can't because there was a change in the links. But yeah. So tell me, as I anxiously await every week my update on what's going on with the bill. Got any news?
The bill is just like last week. They okay. Put it before the committee. That meeting has not happened. They only meet once a month. So as soon as the committee meets and they have that public hearing, we'll have the opportunity to get our public input. The public will have a chance to voice their opinions in their side of the you and the commissioners will also be able to ask questions. I believe that is going to be not tomorrow, but the following Thursday at 6:30.
Yeah, that's a work day for me, unfortunately. So it'll be Thursday the 30th you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, at 7, at what time is it?
6:30 at night.
I'm going to put that on my calendar anyway. So 6:30, commissioners. I'll put the commish. Commish meet. There we go. Yeah, that's going to be great. That's, now is our bill on the docket for that, or is it, are we still waiting to see? Or do they, when do they post their agenda?
It'll be on the agenda that night. I've talked to James and Bob Cole about it. Both of them in full support of it. We have had a lot of focus on a more acute issue. We've got a meeting tomorrow morning at 8:30 at the county commissioners. It's a working session, but the Santa Rosa hospitals decided to fire nurses for not getting the COVID vaccine or submitting to their weekly testing with their swabs that cause cancer. But we've found that the county, both the hospital, the building itself, and the land, and their lease was up in 2004. So they've been operating on a month-to-month since 2004. So the county controls the building, the land, and as well as some federal funding that was issued through the CARES Act. So we got quite a bit of leverage over the hospital. We're going to see how that turns.
So, yeah, because remember you talked about this last week. This is brilliant. This is just a wonderful thing. So is the county commissioners meeting about Santa Rosa Hospital? Are they talking, are there things in the background going on? Are they thinking of holding the lease or giving up the lease and saying, hey, you don't have your land anymore? You know, what are they thinking of doing that you know or that you can tell me at this point?
So from what I understand, it's on the agenda tomorrow. We're going to talk it all out. We've got a presentation that we're going to make.
Can you videotape it? Is this public? And is it open to the public where you could video it and then post it so we can see what's going on?
Oh, absolutely. The county, it'll be recorded on video officially for the county. That way you can grab it off the county website, but we'll also have people live streaming, I believe, as well.
Yeah, put it on Arise Patriots, and I'll share it on my page, and you can always share it to the Action Radio group, because this is good stuff. Because everything we do here is like a model; it's a model for counties across Florida and counties across the United States. So if we can exert pressure on a hospital, now this is a private hospital, but it's on public land. Is that how it works? Or the county owns the land that the hospital's on?
They own the land and the building, so the business, the hospital itself, all the materials inside belong to the company, but the building and the land are both owned by the people.
Okay. Do you think the commissioners are leaning towards exerting pressure to stop firings over the stupid mask mandate? I mean, the vaccine mandate?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Absolutely. They've reached out to me several times asking what our wishes are, what the people are expecting of them. And the hospital happens to land in James Calkins' district.
Okay.
I believe they are going to, at some point, if not tomorrow morning, at some point, officially request the board of trustees for the hospital their presence at a public meeting. So they're definitely leaning towards putting some pressure on them, but we'll find out officially tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, that sounds wonderful. I really like what our county commission's doing. I mean, the fact that, I guess I just always expect opposition to do good things, because I was in California for too long, and all the good ideas got squelched, and all the good candidates got trounced and, vote frauded. And apparently there's just massive vote fraud, as we all expected. But the details are now coming out of the massive vote fraud in the California recall. And I think it was Mike Lindell announced, in fact, I saw his little blurb on One American News, and I've got a story on him. From let's see what it is here. Right Wing News Broadcasting, RSBN, Right Side. Yeah, I think it's Right Side Broadcast News. There we go. That about some 300,000 votes that were originally yes for recall were suddenly flipped to no. By a flip of a switch, and so we all know it's a fraud election. I knew that was going to happen. That's not what I was concerned about. What I was concerned about, and you can let me know this what you think too, is the fact the Republicans did nothing about it. you know, the geldings, the gelding old party. They didn't talk about it before the election. They didn't talk about it after the election. They certainly didn't say anything during the election. There were no monitors. I mean, every post office should have had a monitor in it. If that's not legal, then we have to make it legal. But the fact that they weren't there, the fact that Republicans didn't have, you know, observers from every Republican state organization and the national organization all over California shows that they don't care about vote fraud. And so I think there's no reason to think that 2022 is going to be any different than the California recall election. They're going to cheat. They're going to keep control of Congress. Everybody's, you know, running around going, hey, we'll get them in 2022, because the Republicans always say that, and most times they lose. It doesn't happen. They say, well, we'll get them in 2024, and then they'll lose. Well, we'll get them in 2028. Well, you know, but eventually you run out of, you know, days on the planet. You know, you run out of time. And they keep saying it, and it just never happens. So I am not confident at all about 2022 based on what happened just now in the California election, which means we have more work to do than ever, that a citizen legislature that shows the way to freedom in a way that, you know, neither the Marxists nor the geldings have any interest in doing is critical. And we start with the county here and we advance across the whole country. And then, of course, we're getting international groups now starting to take a look at what we're doing as well. And so that's, I think, how this builds. But your impressions, California election, what did you think?
Absolutely. And to go back just a little bit, the sure. reason we've got such a good positive response from our elected officials here, I truly believe is because of the work that the people have done over the last several years. Okay. We have put pressure on politicians that don't vote correctly, that stand against freedom, and they quit. So we've gotten a lot of politicians that have quit and ran away, and we've replaced them with constitutionally minded people. So that's why we get such a positive response when we try to get something accomplished. I guess it's twofold. One, they're scared to death of us, and two, that we've actually got good people in them.
Well, I'm glad they're scared of you. Yeah, that's wonderful. This is why I'm so glad we get to work together. That is a critical point. And this goes for school boards, too. We've got to replace some people there. There's really two things you have to do. You have to have the good people in government, and you have to have the good people, you know, working with government, because they can't do it all, because they're doing whatever they do, and they still have to spend a certain amount of time fundraising, campaigning, things like that. But we don't have to do that. You and I don't have to do that. We can spend all our time on the issues, and we can present them, and we can come up with the bills. And as I say at Action Radio, we write the bills that we consent to be governed by. Doesn't mean they're going to pass.
Right.
You know, but if we have good people in there, there's a good chance that they will. But we set the original parameters. We set the goalposts. We set, you know, where we believe that people should be, the laws that will give us the most freedom. And so the fact that, you know, you've worked with the county commission, the city council of Milton's a lot better, you know, all these things are happening. And this, you know, bodes well for people around the country. Go to your school boards, your city councils, and your county commissions. If you can change them, you can change a whole lot of things that directly impact your life, much more than Congress or even the state legislatures. So a lot of
Absolutely.
Stuff, you know, yeah. And then if you do it locally, it becomes a model for something much bigger, what we're doing here. Yeah. 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 Tell me more. This is great.
And, so more to your original question, the recall election in California was an easy call. I knew that it was going to be fraud, and 2022 is going to be a fraud. The problem with the Republican Party, and I'm finding this, I've actually recently joined the executive committee of the Republican Party, just because it's a platform big enough and strong enough to make any difference. And you have all the regional, like Santa Rosa County, we have our Republican executive committee, but there's so much red tape in nonsense that they can't do anything. They have to ask permission from the state party to do anything that they want to do. They can't even back a candidate or vote a certain way or have they can't have a list of people that the Santa Rosa Republican Executive Committee backs. It has to come from the state. And then if the state wants people like Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, then guess who you're going to have to back? And that's what we got to change. These state and national parties control their local elections through their local branches. And in a school board race, it's you cannot even ask them if they're Republican or Democrat in the Republican Party. why would the Republican National Party not want you to be able to determine whether somebody's a conservative or a liberal and base your decisions off of that?
Well, that's a good question. What do you think? We should explore this for a minute. Why do you think the Republican Party is limiting and deciding and focusing on certain candidates over others?
I think nationally, at least nationally, which is the actual control mechanism, the Democrats and the Republicans, two sides to the same exact coin. It's an illusion of choice, and they control everybody else below them based on their perceived power and influence. And you're not allowed to do this without me saying, and you join this. And that people, it's operated that way for so long, people think it's lawful. Not.
Yeah. Business as usual is the most dangerous principle that's going on. That's why Biden, that's why they sold the White House for Biden. That's why they wanted to get rid of Trump so badly, because he changed business as usual. The perks, the privileges, the status, the titles, you know, the travel, the prestige, the expense accounts, the dinners, the schmoozing with the celebrities and the sports stars, all the things that make politics attractive to, you know, narcissists, basically, you know, really greedy, disgusting people that desire control. You know, anybody that desires control over somebody else should be automatically disqualified from holding office. And I don't know how you do that exactly, but it's more theoretical than a practical, because, you know, you can't do that. But I'm very suspicious always of people that want power. I mean, why do you want power? You know, what are your motivations? You know, you look at me and you call your organization Santa Rosa Volunteers. It's not David Jones, you know, Volunteers. Okay. I mean, this is Action Radio. It's not Greg Penglis Presents. You know, my name there because I'm the host, and I sort of got this whole thing going, but it's really all the other people that are involved. It's the incredible amount of folks that are here that make this show, you know, what it is, and make your organization what it is. But we don't do this for, you know, the satisfaction we get is from the accomplishment, not from the ego. It's a totally different motivation, I think, than somebody in politics. I think that's what makes us, you know, basically better than them, if I can be so blunt. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not something like I have to enjoy what I do because it makes it worth it. But I would much rather be, you know, spending time with my family, going on vacations, going to the beach or going to the mountains, flying, a number of other things. But this is so important, and if I have to sacrifice my time and energy to where my kids have a place to grow up and live in the America that I have in my head, and my grandkids, then it'll all be worth it. But that's our ultimate goal, and that's what makes us stronger. We have more at stake. It's not just an ego or a prestige or a dollar that we're chasing.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep that in mind, because you said something really important there, you know, the America that's in your head, you know, and most people will run around saying this is the greatest country in the world, which it is, but that's not the right question. The right question is how great can it be? You know, I mean, I like where we are to a point. Well, I don't like where we are, but what I'm saying is, you know, the basic, you know, America, the basic United States is, you know, I don't even know for the freest country anymore. Certainly not right now. But the thing is, oh, I guess Bianchi's on. hang on, Bianchi, just a second. We are, like I say, as far as the greatest country goes, it's more important to ask how great can you be and what can be done, I think, than to just sit back and do nothing. The folks that say, hey, the Founding Fathers are wonderful. We got the best founding documents ever. Well, that's right. But I think even the Founding Fathers would say, look, you idiots. And they'd be kicking us in the butt. So what are you doing sitting back here letting all this happen? Why, you know, we gave you the country. We gave you the republic. You're supposed to move it forward, not backward. You know, that's where
right.
I sit. Yeah. Okay. All right, let me bring up Pianca. Then I got, I think either you or somebody gave me this, speaking of the Senate, Luis Miguel. Was that you who gave me this card that's sitting on my desk that I haven't called yet? Running
yes.
for Senate, I guess. Okay, yeah, we'll talk about him for a minute. Let me get Pianca in, first of all, and bring him. Have you talked to him before? He's one of our regular callers.
I have.
Okay, good. All right. Bianchi, you're on with David Jones. This is our Santa Rosa Volunteers update. Sir.
Yeah, good morning, David. Yeah, Greg, Gene flipped me over too fast. I wanted to ask a question. But
okay. Well, you can
David,
go back and talk to Gene. I don't mind. Sorry. But you can talk, yeah,
David, you made the point that you're not supposed to ask a person that's running for school board what their political affiliations is.
Why not?
But David, well, I don't know.
Okay.
That's what he said.
Oh,
but
well,
here's the thing.
The Republican Executive Committee, which is the local branches of your state and national party, are told by the state and the national party that they cannot ask the candidate and back a candidate based on what their party affiliation is. Private citizens obviously can do that, and even as a private individual in the committee, you can ask them that. I was just illustrating the control that the state and the national parties have over their independent local counterparts.
Yeah, one of the things I want to explore, hold on, Penny, just for a second. What I want to explore with both of you is the idea of reducing the power of parties, even eliminating them of people that are actually in office. I think that's one of the greatest dangers because the Democrats have turned impeachment into a poll. You know, Nancy Pelosi says, who thinks Trump should be impeached? And they all go, oh, yes, because they want their committee chairs. They want their perks. They want their prestige. They want their titles. And to have that much power over party, you know, the Speaker of the House should have no power beyond, you know, the basic powers of Speaker, you know, the original powers, not the ability to decide what legislation goes to the floor, what does not, you know, who serves on what committee, you know, and the power, the Speaker's a dictator in the House now. I mean, the House has lost all semblance of being the people's house. It's Nancy Pelosi's house, and what she says goes, because she has a majority Democrat. So I think something we need to look into, you know, as we get more and more into this stuff, is the reduction of the power of the parties or possibly elimination of them for people that are actually in office. Let's go to Pianki and David. Pianki, what do you think?
Well, what David said, I think, is flawed as a principle.
Okay.
Because
okay.
If you got four candidates, two white and two black, you know 99% of those blacks going to be Democrat. That needs to be changed. If you're betting on a horse, Democrat, Republican, you're going to bet on the blacks. We got to start using common sense on this. That's how these Democrats get you. Anyway, I just wanted to put
that. Well, I would challenge that. I think that used to be the case, but you look at the people that are running now. And, in fact, I think I sent you this, and I posted on my page. It happened right before the show. I saw it. Governor DeSantis has appointed a black new Surgeon General for for Florida. And he's from Nigeria. He's an immigrant. You know, and he reminds me of like Stella Emanuel, another Nigerian doctor who came here. You know, and so, he's a conservative black immigrant serving in a Republican conservative administration. So I don't think you can make that assumption as much as you could before. You look at Ben Carson and a bunch of other folks in government.
Well,
yeah.
You can't make the assumptions that Nigerians are black. They don't identify themselves as black. The only skin color, the only person with other than white skin that identifies themselves as black is those in the United States. No place on the African continent. My wife has gotten in. They don't identify themselves as black, so you made that there was a flaw. If you got a room full in Florida of people that's black, and I'm not saying this, I'm just telling you like it is.
No,
99% of the time, they are Democrats.
Oh, no.
Maybe 95.
Yeah, but I think that's changing. I think that's changing as there are more conservative black gun groups. There are, you know, different people running for office, and this guy just happens to, you know, I mean, I don't know the percent. That's an interesting question. I assumed probably wrongly that most Nigerians were black, but it's just because I think African
was
black.
Well, yeah, you
black.
Did it so wrong.
Okay.
Well, then why come you can't
ask
here. Them their political affiliation? It makes a difference.
Well, he was introduced as Nigerian by the governor. That's why I mentioned it. And it's more interesting than the fact that he's an immigrant, that he's here, that he's conservative, that he's helping out, and he's a new Surgeon General. So, of course, the next thing I want to ask is can we then, you know, get rid of some of the previous Surgeon General's executive orders, and can we go forward? Can Florida be the state that now promotes hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and cures, as opposed to just the monoclonal
antibody?
Yeah, I'm
talking about school board, Greg. It's the school board. It's the school where they try to attack to get to the kids. Critical race theory. Cross dresses rolling around the floor with your children in the kindergarten library. School board members should be able to identify their political affiliation so you can get a better idea on what their thoughts are when it comes to running a school district.
Well, they should know before the election, too, but that's a media job. That's a media job to interview those folks, find out what their political persuasions are, do some research, do some background, check their resume, and report on it. You know, I mean, they should
media,
disclose it, but...
Media is in the cancer culture.
Well,
I'm
media. David's media. Dave, what do you think? Should we get a little project going with the school board people? Or before the election, we should probably at least try to interview them, you and me, you know, on this segment of the show. In fact, that might be a great thing for us to do is get local candidates on with you and me and anybody else who wants to join us from the local community.
Yeah, the school board is one of our main focuses. The school board is absolutely 100% where the progressives are capturing the minds of the young people. And mm-hmm. no matter what we accomplish, if we restore our country back to the freedom and constitutionality and we accomplish all of our goals, mm-hmm. At some point we're not going to be around anymore. And if we allow these people to take the minds of our children, then it's just going to go right back and we're going to accomplish nothing. So that is a big focus of ours. I stay as far from judging candidates based on their appearance as I can possibly get. Our superintendent, Karen Barber, is one of the most prime examples of that. You know, she's a fairly attractive middle-aged woman that gets up there and smiles and she says all the right things. And everybody just fell in love with her because she had the most campaign ads and she put up the most signs and she talked real sweet, but she is an absolute worst nightmare for the kids in our county. And we have to get to facts and information and how these people think and believe and then back them based on that.
Mm-hmm. We can put our own little election materials too. I mean, there's so many possibilities here, depending on how many folks, you know, join our organization locally here and what we can do. I want a couple of things we want to get to in the last. Well, let me see. I don't know how much time you have, David. I want to talk about this guy, Luis Miguel, because we have a problem in Florida with our entrenched senators. And I think most states have a problem that by the time you get up to the Senate, you're usually pretty well connected, you usually have a lot of name recognition. It's hard to remove incumbent senators. And I remember Marco Rubio in particular, and I was in California when he ran, and Mark Levin had him on, and he sounded like the most wonderful, independent, new conservative. He's Hispanic. He's, you know, he's young. He's all these great ideas. He sounds like a real conservative. And then he gets in office. He's one of the biggest rhinos we've got. You know, so there's no accounting for it. Or at least he started off with the right ideas. And then somehow along the way, he kind of lost his way and traded money for principles or status for principles, or he traded his office. You know, your opinion of Senator Rubio, and then I want to talk about Luis Miguel, who I don't know anything about yet, but if we can get him on the show, we will. So, David.
Yeah, so I was the same way with Marco Rubio when he first came onto the scene. The things that he was saying and the principles that he was standing behind, he had my full support. I actually voted for him in the primaries when he ran for office against my better judgment. But then he turned into the rhino that we have today. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you start talking about the money and the corruption and mm-hmm. They get to D.C. And before, and I've had Matt Gaetz tell me this, and I believe you were there and heard it too when he had his open gates night. When he first went to D.C., when he was first elected, he mm-hmm. didn't even get to the congressional building. He gets off the bus and gets immediately into the lobbyist. And they take him around and show him what D.C.'s actually like and mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. We have to get those people away from our elected officials. And until we do, nothing's going to change. It doesn't matter how good of people, Luis Miguel, he's a great guy. He's answered a few of my questions. He seems to be, you know, in line with our principles, but mm-hmm. none of that matters when he hands you a briefcase with $100 million in it.
Yeah, it's like they make the Faustian bargain. They sell their soul for the great career. So in other words, as long as they, and both parties do this, right? So they get what I call the talk, and the talk has been a couple of times. The real talk was the one that happened January 6th while the Capitol Hill invitation walk-in was going on. and they got the talk, and then they came back and all voted for Biden. And so that's, you know, and you know what that talk was, you know, your committee chairs, your positions, your status, your campaign funds for the next election are all at stake here. This is how you will vote. And this is what you will do, or, you know, we're going to primary you, and we're going to run people against you, and you will lose everything. I mean, I know that's what happened. They'll never admit it. You know, they'll never talk about it. And in fact, nobody in Congress who got to talk will say anything. I know what happened. I know it happened by deductive reasoning, not by actual evidence yet, but I'll certainly, I'm always looking for it. But yeah, so they get seduced. And in fact, now was that the one down at in Navarre? I forgot this place. I was right on the water. He had an open gate tonight. Was that it? Or was it up in Jay? Or where do we meet? I think I met you. We mm-hmm. met before I knew who you were. That makes any sense.
Yeah, this one was the one up in Jay. Okay. So he had visited the high school and things like that, and he had... when he started talking about it, I sat up on the edge of my seat because I thought he was actually going to tell people what happened. But he yeah. you know, got right up the 1 yard line and backed up just like the rest of them do.
Yeah, we need to talk to him. We should go to his office or try and make an appointment or something, especially concerning our bill, because this affects him too. Because if this catches on and he doesn't jump on this issue, you know, he's going to miss out. So I always like to keep him informed. But the fact is, I haven't heard from his office really since I was fired from WBY. And he used to be on every week. We got to talk every week. It was great. You know, I was able to provide him ideas. He was able to take those to Washington. You know, we had this amazing system. We had bills. I'll tell the story sometime again of how we wrote the citizenship question on the census bill that went from we wrote it on the air on a Thursday. You know, I posted to writeyourlaws.com on a Friday. I gave it to Matt Gaetz the next morning. He was back on the show again Tuesday for his regular call saying this is a great bill. I'm taking it to Washington. You know, ended up, I think, with the Freedom Caucus and in the White House. You know, I mean, that was over 5 days. You know, so the impact that we can have is staggering. But ever since then, you know, once he became a national figure and got hair gel, we haven't heard from him. You know, it's terrible. But we need to, you know, it's for his own sake, if nothing else, we need to kind of get him back, you know, into the county, into the local politics and start shaking hands again, start meeting people. You know, I'd love to do a thing at the Imaging. You know, for those that don't know, we have one of the greatest theaters in the country here. It's the Imaging Theater. It was built in 1912, same year as the Titanic. Okay, you put that in perspective. It's just, you know, intimate theater. I mean, the stage is right there, and the audience is like 3 feet away. And people, B.J. Thomas is there, and people can just, they were shouting out questions. B.J., dude, you know, where's your next trip or whatever? You know, what do you got to go? Well, you know, what's the secret to success? And all these things, people just talking, it was great. But that's a place where we could hold a joint Santa Rosa Volunteers Action Radio town meeting where we ask him real questions. I mean, real questions and see what happens. But I think that would be a good thing for us to do and then video the whole thing. Anyway, what happened to Gaetz? What do you think? When's the last time you've had communication, any kind of decent communication with him or his office?
The last time I had any real conversation with him was probably March of last year. Right before the national emergency, and he kind of turned into a clown and wore that NBC mask to Congress, and you know, I was like, look, this isn't a joke. This, you know, yeah. And I was trying to talk and set up what I saw coming, and I don't know if I sounded like a Looney Tune or if he knew I was right and didn't want to talk about it anymore. But right after that, he kind of fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I think we need to go save our congressman because I don't see any really viable alternatives right now. But I think, like I said, I want to see if we can do something off the air. We'll see if we can get him on the show, too, especially with you and me both to be able to do this. This is a great forum for us to be able to talk to people. Pianki, do you have a comment? Because I have a different issue I want to raise here with however much time Dave has left.
I got one more comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
And also, there needs to be conservative clubs in your schools, your high schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the elementary school, even. I've hardly ever seen any in elementary school.
I don't know if kids are political at that age. You know, we've got Turning Point USA, which is something that we're trying to join. I'll give you a little inside information on one of the many things we're doing. Turning Point USA, I think, we've got two colleges here, University of West Florida, I think I said, and Pensacola State College. So we got two places here where I think Turning Point has chapters. Turning Point's the national, that's Charlie Kirk's organization. And so what I want to do is work with them.
All across the country.
Yeah, no, they're
in one more place.
Where?
Your libraries.
Okay. So I think that's a great idea.
I would hope that the librarian has opportunity to either be conservative or because it determines what books your kids are being exposed to. So that's all I got to say.
No, that makes sense. But I think that like a national organization like Turning Point, and what I'm going to try and do is work with one of the chapters here, either Pensacola State College or University of West Florida, to have them be the first Turning Point citizen legislative organization. And I'll teach, because the college kids are great. You know, the college kids will do anything. I did some of my best investigations. So I learned how to do investigating. It was as a college student. I wasn't even intending to. We had a graduate research center at the University of Massachusetts that was having all kinds of occupational health and safety problems. And they had NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. It's the research division of OSHA. And they were there. Of course, they're government, so they couldn't find anything. And it's a state college, so they didn't want to find anything. We found it. We had five students, you know. And I was an environmental student at the time, and we had engineers and folks. We discovered it was the fume hoods. That the elevator shafts were creating a negative pressure because the ceiling fans were too strong, so they're actually drawing fumes into the building rather than expelling them out the fume hoods. So the fume hoods weren't working, and that's why people were breathing toluene and some of these other horrible solvents, and that's what was causing the health problems. We found that, five students. Okay, so college students can, I still got the report, you know, so college students can do amazing things, and if we can help them become citizen legislators and lobbyists, I want students to be lobbying in Tallahassee and lobbying in Washington. We'll train them how to do it. We're going to let them go. And so citizen lobbyists, because citizen lobbyists don't have money to share around, so we're in a more virtuous position. We're there for freedom. And the people that believe in freedom and are your best advocates. And so I got a lot of plans. I don't even think I've talked to David about this yet, but that's some of the things that I'll be working on. And of course, I'll be combining, Santa Rosa Volunteers and as we do more and more stuff here, together to be able to create and advocate the legislation, the citizen legislation that will make us more free. That's the whole point. Wow, that was good. I think I'll save that. Sorry. Questions on that or comments on that? And then I have a different issue that I want to run by you both. And Gene, feel free to jump on, join us too.
The only thing I have
a good point.
Okay, let's go, David. And then Pianchi. David?
Right. So, I want to thank Pianchi there. He actually brought up a point that I hadn't thought of, is investigating the books that are in our libraries.
That is a great point.
That's a very valid point, and I'll get the team started on that, at least here locally, because that will tell you a lot about the mindset of who's operating the library and who's funding the library. So I appreciate that. That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, speaking of the team, I'm not sure, I'm going to talk to you, like, say, off the air about what, how much and how many and what they can do, but is there any way we could get a county poll or talk to various organizations, especially the conservative, the Republican, any organization, any advocacy group around here, or just citizens groups, Rotary, and get a sense of do they support this bill, and then can we use that, as lobbying and influence, with our illegal alien free zone bill? Or do you think there's enough support already? We don't need that. I'm just curious.
I think anything that we have will strengthen our position. So there are a lot of clubs. There's the Central Republican Club. There's the Navarre Republican Club. The Executive Committee. I think some of these are meeting twice a week now. There's a lot of different very active people in our community now, and getting this in front of them probably be helpful.
Yeah, I'll try to make some meetings too, but my life is crazy, doing this here. Yeah, go ahead.
One more thing too, Greg.
Sure, no problem.
Your shows and Rush Limbaugh's shows should be turned into a study curriculum.
Well, actually, it's funny you should mention that.
Yeah, then you have a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to a show, listen to a guest, and that can be a lesson plan for the students. And you can derive questions and answers based on what was spoke during the show. That's how you captivate young people and get them in the mold of becoming better patriots and citizens.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, I have a journalist student I'm working with over at Pensacola State College about being a reporter for us and taking our stories and writing reports on them for them. And in fact, he's also you know, hopefully going to be doing stuff with the Turning Point organization. So that's in the works, but I would love to get more students involved. And all our shows are podcasts. You know, it's easy to find. Just go back through the catalog. I'd love to get Blog Talk to do a subject index or an easy way to look them up. They do have a search, but it's an internet-wide search. It's not focused. You know, they need to do a focus just on one show, because we cover so much ground with so many different guests. We have some wild guests. You know, as time goes on, we're getting more and more fascinating people. You know, I want the president on before the 2022 midterms. That's Trump, not the idiot that's occupying the White House, the real president. I want to try something a little different here before the top of the hour. I was looking, you know, I was a Teamster for years and years, and I'm always looking for ways to help, like our Sacred Heart folks, the medical workers at Santa Rosa Hospital, anybody that's facing a vaccine mandate, especially health workers, because I think if the government can turn the health workers into compliant little sheep like they're trying to do with everybody else, they gain. You know, they lose a huge adversary and they gain a huge amount of credibility, because the health, you know, the idea that health workers don't want the vaccine, that to me should be raising red flags with everybody. Wait a minute, why don't they want the vaccine? They're the ones giving it. They're the medical profession. So we really need to protect our health workers. And I found out that the Teamsters have, and my favorite union, having been a Teamster for several years, the Teamsters have a health worker division. It's headquartered in Tampa, and I called them yesterday and left a big message for their business agent. So hopefully we'll get her on too. But David, have you explored with those folks? In fact, I told, you know, various people that I know that are in the health profession facing these vaccine mandates of this, and see if they want to react to it. But have you thought about that, work with it, any ideas, or this is a new idea to you, but, or what do you think of involving the unions? And I'm still trying to find out if they are supporting the employee over the vaccine mandates. I'm still not sure yet, because a lot of them are Democrat run controlled political agenda, but they're still unions and they still have to advocate for the workers. So,
right.
What do you think?
So I have went that route. I know most of the union leaders are extremely progressive Democrats, and we don't have any here locally, so I haven't put a lot of energy into it.
Okay.
But yeah, you don't see them advocating nationally. There should be national strikes and things of that nature ordered by the unions. That's really their intended purpose. They have enough collective power to influence the employer. When three people refuse the vaccine in Santa Rosa Hospital, three people get fired. They up their bonuses and cover the shifts and go about their day. But if 300 out of the 700 employees walk out of there because they're union, then it. I'm still not a big fan of unions, but that is their intended purpose, and you don't see them standing up anywhere in this country.
Yeah. Well, companies have always bargained collectively through management. Management bargains collectively. You can talk to one manager or another manager or another manager. It doesn't matter. They're all going to have the same company policy, and when you question it, they're going to say, well, that's just policy, as if that's the end of the argument. But workers, you know, employees always bargain individually unless they're in a union. So to me, if you're going to equalize the collective management, you have to have a collective union bargaining on behalf of the individual worker, as collective management bargains on behalf of the individual managers. And so for me, it makes perfect sense to have a union. It's freedom of association. It's perfectly constitutional, as long as you're doing it with a private company. Because a private company has limited assets, so there's leverage there. You can't, if the union has a contract so outrageous that they bankrupt the company, then they lose all the union jobs, and then the union members hate the union. So that doesn't work. But if the company, totally exploits the union, then the workers hate the union because they're not doing enough. So there's a balance in there. You can't bankrupt the company, and you can't let them get away with stuff either. So that's the whole point of bargaining. And are contracts perfect? No, but I've lived under several of them. And I found them a whole lot better than the parts of the company that I work for that were not unionized. It's night and day. I found something here, Better Workplaces, Better World, SHRM. I don't know what that stands for. I couldn't find it. But an article, Alan Smith, who's a lawyer, August 12, 2021, must employers bargain with unions over mandatory vaccines? And he starts off, he says, a unionized employer can't usually impose a mandatory vaccine policy unilaterally. Instead, an employer must bargain with the union to agreement or impasse before adopting such a policy, although a union may waive its right to bargain. This is at least one union has sued over a mandatory vaccine policy, maintaining that an employer adopted the policy without bargaining long enough. You know, one more quote here. Most mandatory vaccination policies ultimately provide for discipline or discharge, which is quintessentially a mandatory subject of bargaining. And that's Anthony George, an attorney with Brian Cave, Leighton Paisner, and that's in Denver. I wonder if they're a union-busting firm. Anyway, it says, a policy might require COVID-19 vaccination as a condition of entering the workplace. But it's one thing. It's different if you know about the condition going ahead. It's another thing if you've already got the job and they're trying to change your job or change your requirements. This is employees who refuse to be vaccinated and can't work remotely would eventually be subject to discipline or discharge for failing to report to work unless they need a disability-related or religious accommodation, which brings about why we all became ministers. In fact, my minister certificate should be in the mail right now. So you can call me Pastor Greg. We've got Reverend Pianchi. David, you want to become a minister too, and you can issue religious exemptions for vaccines? What do you think?
I've thought about that, and personally, I don't like it for me. I understand the purpose of it, and I think it's a great bargaining, and it helps your position. As spiritually, I don't think it's right for me. I'm not a pastor. I don't care. So I have some moral issues there, and we submitted an 8-page religious exemption request that was signed by a pastor, and they didn't even read it. They received it. We both hand delivered it and emailed it to the management staff. These people don't care.
That's what you have to make them care.
You should have submitted Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution along with it.
Yeah. You know, Congress cannot establish religion or prohibit the free exercise. Yeah. So it's what they're doing is they're prohibiting the free exercise of religion. So if they are saying that you don't have a religious exemption, that's a blatant violation of the First Amendment. You know, right there. I mean, Pianchi's absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll go to in front of a judge and we'll figure all that out. But that's long-term solutions. And meanwhile, they're still doing it to other nurses and the other employees and these people that are not strong enough to stand up and are not in a financial position to be able to weather the storm. There's stories where there was a video we posted just the other day where a federal employee was forced to submitted her religious exemption. Her religious exemption was denied. And she got the vaccine and ended up dying a week or so later of congestive heart failure.
Yeah, this
has happened every single day.
It's happening too often. One is too many, but it's happening way, way more. You know, there's a couple of videos out there on other than YouTube sites. And Project Veritas has a new video out that they're talking about congestive heart failure. They're talking about, the spike proteins are causing all kinds of things. Myocarditis, which is swelling of the heart. You know, there are horrendous things happening. The vaccines, is going to turn out to be far more dangerous, the doctors are predicting, than COVID ever was. Because the survival from COVID is 99.5% on average. It's 99.9% for young people. It's insane that all the things that people are going through, the whole vaccine mask insanity over a disease that's 99.5 to 99.999, completely not only survivable, but survivable easily. Most people don't even know they have it. Go ahead.
And we have the medicine that can make the people better that we're actively lobbying against, at least on a national level.
Yeah, this is the first disease where the cure is illegal. put it simply. Sure. Yeah.
Since November or December, I don't remember the exact date when Congress was briefed on the research studies on ivermectin, but from the day that Congress was briefed on the effectiveness of ivermectin, and it's public, it was in an open congressional meeting. From that day and going forward, every single death is on their head. Their hands are dirty. And I have to get away from that subject because I get somewhat emotional. I get fairly angry over that.
Oh, listen, we get angry all the time on different issues, but that's fine. We can move on from that. Pianchi, do you have a comment?
Well, you're talking about unions. Mm-hmm. Unions are losing membership, so they should be more anxious to get on the bandwagon to help represent people who are being mandated on these vaccines. People always remember what good you've done for them, and you never know. They may become a union member. at some point in time.
Well, I would think so. It is stupid of the unions to not work with the workers. You know, and I think that's a viable way to go. I mean, you know, granted, the hypocrisy of becoming a minister, I absolutely recognize. I haven't studied it. I don't have a theology degree. I'm not going to be a practicing person. I'm not going to have a congregation unless we consider our citizen legislature, you know, the congregation. But I sort of wrestle with the hypocrisy, but understand that I think I'm doing this for a good reason, that if I can help people, if I can save somebody's life by writing a vaccine exemption on a religion basis, or if we get enough people who become ministers such that they're writing their own exemptions, you know, it's another way to fight back. And that's how I see it. So I can easily, you know, rationalize and justify that I'm fighting back. I'm fighting back in a way where I'm using the system against the people that are using the system against me, and people I care about, and people I've never met, and you know, all the folks out there that are forced into this absolute tyranny of taking something that nobody needs. From Judy Mikovits, nobody needs this vaccine. Nobody. Even if you're high risk, you have a lower immune system. I mean, the worst thing, I think the people that probably need it the least are the ones that are older with the lower immune systems, because they're the ones that are going to have the most damage from this thing.
Well, you know, we can talk about the technicalities, and we can talk about the science, but the ultimate thing is the liberty that people are giving up. That liberty is very, very precious. It should be left up to their decision if they want to expose their bodies to something or they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get a word from Gene here, if you want to get in something here, and then I'm going to take a break here, play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week. I'll let Dave go on with all the wonderful work he's doing. And well, actually, I should give Dave another minute, too. Gene, do you have something before Dave goes?
No, I don't have anything really to add.
Okay. All right. Dave, you want to sum up for the week? Anything? You should Santa Rosa website and Facebook pages and anything else, emails, all that kind of stuff. But anything else that you want to cover before we go, move on?
No, that's pretty much what we've got going on. Our big focus is the employees that are being affected by the vaccine mandates. Anybody that's local that wants to get involved, get with us on the Arise Patriots Facebook page or the Santa Rosa SRV1776.com website. We could use all the help we can get. And if you're not local, get with me and I'll help you set up and organize and set up a similar system in your home area. And I found that's kind of a big theme amongst people. They have all this energy and they know there's a problem. They want to do something about it, but they don't know where to start. They don't know how to do it. So anybody that, if you feel like that, get in touch with us and I'll help you out. I'll show you how to get all this started, how to organize, how to get events and et cetera. So anything we can do to help, that's what we're here for.
You know, this is why I love the fact that we can work together, because, you know, you know how to do things that I don't know how events work or how to coordinate any of that stuff. You know, what I do, I'm better at the creative end, actually working with the legislation, creating Action Radio, teaching people how to be citizen legislators. And so, you know, this kind of combination, I think, is vital, is that you use the strengths that you have and you find people that have the strengths that you don't, and you become greater because of it. So if we can be a model, not only for making Santa Rosa County and Milton the freest city and county in the country, but we can also teach other people how to do what we do. But the biggest point you made, it's absolutely true, is that there's energy out there. People are frustrated. They are furious. And when they go to traditional sources like the Republican Party, which I left shortly after the November election, I unregistered. I went and I was trying to make a campaign about it, but nobody was particularly interested. It's like, okay, fine, I'll make my own protest. But until the geldings become, you know, stallions, I'm not going to have anything to do with them, because I'm not going to be associated with a group like that. And people say, well, you can't vote in the primary. I said, well, so? what does that matter? So I have two bad choices to go against the Democrats, Marxist. You know, so I've got a gelding opposed to a Marxist. What if I don't want either one of them? I'm going to start writing in people. You know, but the action that we can do here. And the nice thing about what you do and what I do is it doesn't matter who's in office in terms of party, because our bills are for everybody. You know, they're egalitarian, if I can be so, you know, so sophisticated here. But the bills, you know, bring freedom to everybody. You know, we're not bringing freedom to certain people. It's no special interest here. This is everybody. Everybody benefits when illegal aliens are kicked out of your county. You know, everybody benefits, you know, when we increase our freedom. Everybody benefits when you get better people on the school board and the county commission and the city councils, you know, in terms of freedom. And it's weird. Freedom almost has to be imposed. We got to talk about that sometime, too, that pure democracy doesn't work because people won't vote for freedom. They'll vote for bondage. They'll vote themselves other people's stuff. They'll vote themselves socialism. The system collapses, and then they wonder why. So the founders knew it too. We know it. So if freedom, you know, in other words, for Bianchi and Gene and me and Dave to be free, we have to drag everybody else with us. It's just the way it works. I don't mind doing that, but, you know, stop making it so hard for us to drag you. You know, give a little bit of energy. But people need a place to go. And if we can show how successful, you know, what we're doing at Action Radio, because it's new, and teach people and your, you know, proven methods of meetings, of resistance, of, you know, everything from T-shirts to, you know, protests to standing up, you know, calmly in the meetings and presenting the cases. All that stuff is critical. People need, they've got the energy. We just need to direct it. And I think that's what you and I can do best. On that note.
Absolutely. I appreciate everything that you do, and we'll just keep fighting until we achieve our goals. Thank you.
Yeah. And then what do we do? Because we'll have to think of something else to do. I don't think we'll ever quite get there, but we'll teach people how to do what we do, and they can carry on after us. Thank you, sir. David, really appreciate having you on the show. Let's do it again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, there we go. David Jones, co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers. I'm going to play, in fact, like I say, these are the folks that are sponsoring this amazing project. When Bianchi talked about an education series, that's exactly what we're doing here. This is my 16th episode of our founding document, starting with the Declaration, and I'll go back to it too, the Declaration of Independence. You know, we haven't even really started the Constitution yet, but we're doing the Federalist Papers, something that I wasn't really familiar with, and I wasn't familiar at all with the Anti-Federalist Papers, and the Anti-Federalist Papers are turning out to be a lot more fun and a lot more accurate, a lot more interesting. Let me play you this one on John Jay and Federalist Paper number 5. And we'll be back in a few minutes. So listen and enjoy, and we'll talk to you after this. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. Federalist Papers number 5. Once again, we return to the elitist national government promoting and future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay. It's hard to imagine any of his court opinions were of much use, given he returns to his favorite tactic of starting with a false hypothesis, using a false comparison for evidence, and making up his predetermined conclusion with absolutely no progression of evidence to prove his case. His basic premise is that since England and Scotland formed an entire and perfect union, which is something he got from a letter by Queen Anne back in 1706 when the states were mere colonies, that we could do exactly the same here with our states. He was, in fact, modeling our oppressor to use as evidence that we can have as good a union as England and Scotland. I guess John Jay had never heard of William Wallace and the various troubles between England and Scotland over the centuries. I wonder if, like General Milley, he knew his counterpart in England. The reason this is a false comparison is that England is a monarchy and therefore irrelevant to comparison to our states under the Articles of Confederation. Their people aren't even citizens. They are subjects. Scotland has been under the thumb and control of England also for centuries, as the King of England is also the King of Scotland. So again, this is hardly a voluntary or equal union, as are the states under the Articles of Confederation. From royalcentral.co.uk comes the current title of Queen Elizabeth II, which reads, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, head of the Commonwealth, defender of the faith, with the style of Majesty. One has to wonder if John Jay was secretly a monarchist, and not just an elitist national government proponent. He never speaks of individual rights, and only of a strong national government with a strong national defense to defend against all enemies, real or imagined. Which brings us to the false evidence and made-up conclusion. He argues that the only way the states can defend themselves is to be under a strong national government. And that is why 3 or 4 confederacies that might form without a strong constitution would make America indefensible.
And yet, the colonies, before the Articles of Confederation, threw off the oppression of the British monarchy John Jay is using in Federalist No. 5 for the model for our new nation. I'm sure this did not win him converts. He repeats himself again in this paper when he writes, "It was remarked in the preceding paper that weakness and divisions at home would invite dangers from abroad, and that nothing would tend more to secure us from them than union, strength, and good government within ourselves." He doesn't define or describe the three or four confederacies he tries to convince us the states will degenerate into if the Constitution is not passed. This is directly countered by the 13 individual states at the time of this paper, which were operating rather well as one confederacy. But John Jay is convinced that he can generate the fear with this bogus argument to scare people into running to a national government for safety. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Why else would he make all this stuff up? John Jay does define one of his confederacies by saying, "The North is generally the region of strength, and many local circumstances render it probable that the most northern of the proposed confederacies would, at a period not very distant, be unquestionably more formidable than any of the others." This is rather prophetic and ironic that the Confederacy of the Civil War, formed under the very Constitution John Jay was arguing would prevent such confederacies. Jay writes that each confederacy would be as distinct nations, with individual treaties with foreign nations. Of this, he said, "Hence, it might and probably would happen that the foreign nation with whom the Southern Confederacy might be at war would be the one with whom the Northern Confederacy would be the most desirous of preserving peace and friendship." He always writes of conflict that might happen, but he never acknowledges that his fears are never realized by the states while operating under the Articles of Confederation, or that the states had a mutual support and friendship pact through the Articles, such that if one state was attacked by a foreign power, the other states would immediately rush to the defense. The colonies had neither an army, a navy, nor a national government, but created a continental army and navy nonetheless, and won independence from England. This goes against the doom and gloom of Jay's imaginary scenarios of why something that is working won't work. So what exactly was John Jay talking about? Seems to me he has a predetermined conclusion in search of evidence and comparisons that don't exist. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. we talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take, that is Action Radio.
All right, and things are moving on and up right here at Action Radio all the time. We have a new sponsor. We have a new sponsor who's also our webmaster, and he's doing a fabulous job with writeyourlaws.com. So I just want to tell you, if you need help with your small business marketing, you want to contact Eric Cawley. That's E-R-I-C-C-A-W-L-E-Y. He offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, and that's startups and nonprofits, and they market themselves on Google Page One. You gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. His phone number is 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510, and you can reach him at eric@besmallbusiness.com, and that's just like it sounds. His website, besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness.com. And if you happen to miss any part of that, we'll be podcasting about 50 minutes. You can pick it up then. All right, let's get to, we've got calls, we got Gene, we got Pianchi. Let's make Pianchi live again. I'm going to get stuck into this article. Gene, feel free to. Oh, Gene, I promise you I'm going to get the hotel bell. I'm going to make a little sound effect. You know, I'm going to find it in my little collection or some little nice little noise. You can kind of go ping, you know. Gene wants to get in here. And then, of course, that doesn't work. You've always got the gong. You know, so
you may be sorry that you do that when you do that.
Well, I feel like you're being left out sometimes. I mean, you're always welcome to join the conversation, and I know you're judicious about doing so. Yeah, but feel free, and you know, even if our regular callers, you can you know, feel free to greet them as well, even though we know who they are. Pianchi, got a comment before I get started with something new? Do you like our founding moments for this week?
I got two quick ones. One, I hope you will become a place for conservative business to do their advertising. But you know another thing too. I was just thinking when I was in the fifth grade, mm-hmm. or maybe the sixth, I had to learn Patrick Henry's speech. Hmm. Give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah.
A far cry from what education is today.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a school with black students, and we had to learn and recite in front of the classroom
mm-hmm.
Patrick Henry's speech. And I'll never forget, one of my classmates sounded just like a preacher when he said, "Forbid it, oh my God."
Who was that, Jesse Jackson? I'm just kidding.
Well, I can't remember his name. I think it was Kerry Thorne, but
well, no, did they go on to become a preacher? I mean, I'm just curious. Did they go on to the ministry?
No, he didn't want to become a preacher. He was. That's the way he put the emphasis and put a little bit of this and a little bit of that in his presentation of saying.
That's wonderful. Makes a difference.
Reciting Patrick Henry's speech.
Yeah. So here's the question, though. Did Patrick Henry get liberty or did he get death?
Well, I look at it this way. Liberty is your choice. Death is the jail.
So what did he get? He says, give me liberty or give me death. But no one ever answers the question. So what did he get, liberty or death?
Well, we got liberty. We got away from the king, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. No, he got liberty, too, by the way. He lived for another 30, 40 years or something like that, went on to a political career and stuff like that. But it's just people, you know, they you never get the question. People never – the follow-up is interesting. It's like that we'll go over this sometime, too. The Baptist letter where Thomas Jefferson said there's a wall of separation between church and state. And everybody knows the answer, but no one ever gets the letter that where the Baptist asked the question. And the question was, you know, why is it that Congress has this and the states don't, and why is it that the states can have a religious test and Congress can't? And it was a fascinating question. And so it really applies more to the states. I'll drag it. I'm probably not saying as well as I could, but that's one of those things where people know the answer, but they forget to ask the question. It's quite fascinating. Anyway, I got an article here from Sidney Powell, who I met when I carried your T-shirts at CPAC in 2018, which I've gone over that story. I met someone else who was fascinating there too. I met a lot of people. I met Gordon Chang. He was on the show subsequently at WBU. I met Grover Norquist. I met Sebastian Gorka for about 30 seconds and have not been on his show since, but I'm trying. I met Mark Levin, and I tried to give him one of our bills. And he says, what am I, your janitor? What are you doing? Get this paper away from me. Who are you? Get away from me. So that was my introduction to Mark Levin. I'll tell him that on his show when I get to be a guest one day. But one of the nicest people was Sidney Powell. and she told me about her book, License to Lie. It is License to Lie. It was all about corruption in the government, and so she's been fighting this for a long time. But she wrote this article, and Jonathan sent this to me, so we'll probably go over this Thursday. But it's called The Untold Election Case That Should Have Stopped the Coup, Why Nancy Pelosi Had to Hurry on January 6th. Okay, and let me see if I can find a date for you. I know it's recent. I don't see a date on this, but this is pretty. Well, let me just get started into it, and feel free, both Pianchi and Gene, even without the hotel bell, to jump in here. She says, among other conservatives that stood up for President Trump amidst the theft of the 2020 election, the legal team that became Defending the Republic challenged election results in multiple states and produced hundreds of pages of evidence of widespread election fraud. The left's mantra of, quote, no evidence is pure propaganda. As the world watched, our four fraud cases across the disputed states were dismissed by each of four federal judges. The courts threw out the cases on the Democrats' talking points, technicalities, many of which were pulled from the dozen of legal history. Not a single of our cases was heard, despite hundreds of affidavits, statistical studies proving mathematical impossibilities, disappearance of mail ballots, mysterious appearances of perfect ballots, evidence of technological manipulation of the vote, and even video of women pulling suitcases from under tables after a staged pipe burst evacuation, and of ballot workers shoving the same ballots through the machines repeatedly, coinciding with an impossible spike in votes, all for Biden. All this was set against the backdrop of an unprecedented and inexplicable stoppage of vote counting across multiple states, followed by the appearance of hundreds of thousands of votes in block injections for Biden, somehow overcoming by a slim margin what was previously a massive shortage of Biden votes. It appeared that the courts were afraid to hear the cases. Americans who had counted on our Article III courts to take up these issues to protect the Republic and our Constitution were left to wonder if this was the law, cowardice, or corruption in the courts. The entire Article III judiciary put its collective head in the sand on the most important issue to face the Republic. This was, well, I think still is, a constitutional crisis. Let me hold up there and see if we have reactions so far. Have you ever heard anything so plainly, accurately, articulately spoken about January 6th vote fraud and everything else? And she's right on as far as I'm concerned.
You know, hearing you say that, it just makes me just feel so sad inside, because the thing is, it's like people that do the right thing, once again, look what happens. They're outcasts. They're made to feel like they're lying, they don't know what they're talking about, and yet the people that are doing what they shouldn't do, doing corrupt, evil things, get by with it. And it's like, one can ask why our world is coming the way it is, or getting the way it is, when all you have to do is just look at this situation. And if there was no voter fraud, then why didn't they want us to check it out just to see? Because if there was nothing to hide, what's the big deal? But every time, you know, when they say something and say, try to say, oh, that's not true, or they say the opposite, you know they're lying because, or they're covering something up, because that's just what the norm is now. And I think that's very sad.
Well, you know, let's put your life coach hat back on for a second. I think you're absolutely right on here. When people are guilty, do they not normally accuse the accuser? Do they use projection? Do they say, well, you're probably doing this, or this is your fault, or you know, how dare you accuse me of this kind of stuff? Isn't that the typical reaction of a guilty person?
Well, I'm not even going to go by a life coach hat, but just from a normal person, yes, exactly. And, you know, unfortunately, I think sometimes we can justify anything. You know, as a person, we can, because, oh, well, that person slighted me, even with the person that said they didn't vote for Trump because Trump said something bad about McCain way back when. And it's like, that's the only reason you didn't vote for Trump, because you hate Trump, and that's what it boiled down to. It wasn't his policies, was nothing else. But when they kept asking questions, that's what the bottom line was. And it's like, but you look at one thing, and oftentimes, I mean, I'm not going to defend Trump, because sometimes I wish he would just, you know, how he said things. But oftentimes, too, what he said was taken so out of context, they just played a comment and not the whole whole speech or the whole part of speech that represented. And so for people, it's easy for us because we want to rationalize that we're doing the right thing and we're doing what's best and righteous and whatever. But at the end of the day, we have to also look at what is the legal thing. And doing counterfeit votes is illegal because, you know what, sooner or later it's going to come out. And the bottom line is this, most people with common sense know that Biden didn't win the election. It was given to him because people did not, because of who he had in charge and the people that are behind him. And I'm not talking just Democrats, it's Republicans too. They all stepped into line because they didn't want Trump in there again. That was obvious. And so I think each person, we have to only, look upon ourselves and look deep within. Why are we doing something? And if we're doing something out of malice, that's not a good reason. If we're doing something out of spite or fear, those are not good reasons. And so it's only we can change one ourselves. And by changing ourselves, hopefully the people around us will see that. And they will, that will get that spark in them to want to do better too. Because you know there's people out there. And if I think more people would come out with things that said, hey, no, this was not right. I mean, what are they going to do? After a while, they've got to start listening. It's just like what they're doing now. They're trying to ram through the voter election, whatever thing in Congress. And how right is that? It's like if they pass something that they don't have to get Republican approval, I think every state needs to take the federal government to court and say, no, this is unconstitutional.
Well, the whole reconciliation process.
And I think we need to get
rid
of the judges. We really need to get rid of judges that aren't following the Constitution. They should not be, there should be no, and I know it's hard to get emotion out of things, but when you're a judge, you look at the facts. You look at the facts. Oh, your opinion
should not
be. Don't
think for a second judges are impartial. They all have
emotion. Yeah, and that's sad. We discovered that yesterday, too. How sad, yeah.
Which case are you talking about?
You know what?
Hold on a second, Jackie. Yeah. Which case are you talking about, Gene? Yes.
Yesterday when they were talking about the mother of the twins and the father with the money who abused the kids.
Oh, I see. The family law thing. Yep.
Yeah, the children to the father who's abusive than the mother that doesn't have as much money. You know what? You don't need a whole lot of money to raise a child right, moral, ethically. But I tell you, you put a child in a household that is abusive, that's how those children learn to behave. And also, they go within themselves, and often they shut down. I mean, how awful is that?
Well, we see what happens at family court and what's happening to families or lack thereof. So it's very different. Yeah, good points. Good points, all of them. All I would say for judges, I don't expect impartiality. I think what's going to happen, and you can remove them. I mean, judges are there for good behavior, not for life. That's one of the assumptions. Assumptions are stronger than truth. And the truth is judges are only there for good behavior. And they could be removed at any time. Congress won't do it. The whole point of Action Radio is to do the things, to inspire the citizenry to do things that the Congress and the other places aren't doing that should. So we're going to write their laws and say, here, what do you think? And then if they don't like them, then we'll lobby. We'll do what anybody else does in this republic. Bianchi, you had a comment.
Well, on the comment about the lawsuits that were took to court.
Uh-huh.
Now, I tend to favor what the court's done. And Gene made mention about the Constitution. When you have controversies between states, that's supposed to be settled by the state. And the reason it's not being settled by the state is because citizens are not doing what they should do in order to hold their representatives accountable.
Yeah.
Those issues
but
about
no,
the ballots...
But
those issues about the ballots, Greg, that was a state's problem, and the legislature supposed to solve that problem.
Well, that's what's happening in Arizona.
Not run
to the
court.
But this one's going to be so excited to hear what happens in Arizona on the 24th, which is Friday. And so we'll see what happens when the Arizona audit comes out. I think they're going to say that there was massive vote fraud, that they're going to decertify Maricopa County, and they're going to call the election for Trump and rescind their Biden electors. That's what I think they're going to do. I think that's going to cause a firestorm in this country. It's going to be fabulous to watch. It's going to be, and this is where real Republicans are doing what real Republicans are supposed to do. Stallions, not geldings.
Well,
go ahead.
And it really doesn't make it doesn't make essence. It makes no difference if it's Republicans or Democrats. The object is that it starts with the state legislatures, and that's where the problem should have been addressed, not go straight to the courts. We know that the courts, the judges are there by political appointment, so how would that look? My goodness. No. Sell it at the state level.
Well, and like I say, a lot of this is being done there, but there's certain things, you know, the Constitution has a provision, like the Texas case. When Texas challenged the other states and said that Texans' citizens were violated, that they had their vote diminished by all the illegal votes in the other states. Therefore, the Texas votes didn't count as much. They weren't equally represented. And they were absolutely right. That case had to go to the Supreme Court. There was no choice. It's right here in the Constitution. They had to take that. They didn't. Okay, so if the one entity in the federal government above all that's supposed to be the most constitutional, if you can even say that, refuses, then they, except for Alito and Clarence Thomas, they also have been booted. You know, but that's another story. Article 3, Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity, you know, that's law and money, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made on which shall be made under their authority to all cases, here we go, affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, that's on the water, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, okay, to controversies between two or more states, there it is, that's where the Texas case had to be taken, all right, between a state and citizens of another state, well, that was replaced by the 11th Amendment, which was stupid, they should have left that in. Between citizens of different states. This is what they can do. And they settle by opinion those cases, and that's it. That's all they can do. They can't make recommendations. They can't make policies. They can't go on and do a Roe v. Wade or a gay marriage or any of the other things that they make up. They can't do any of that stuff. All they can do is issue an opinion settling the case between the disputed parties. Period. End of story. That's it.
Well, I think they did. That's why come they didn't hear it. If you and Gene had two controversies, well, you got to let Gene know what the controversy is, or she has to let you know what the controversy is. Mm-hmm. If you don't, it never will get settled or attempted to get settled. Then the outcome of your attempt to settle is just like a dissent decree. Then if you have some dissent, then you go to the courts.
Yeah, courts should be last resorts, but a lot of times they're first, and it's very different. Let me get to part two. We're kind of running out of time here. We've got 27 minutes left. So the article I'm going over is the untold election case that should have stopped the coup, why Nancy Pelosi had to hurry on January 6th. It's by Sidney Powell, and the website is defendingtherepublic.org, and then /January 6th. She says, we had one silver bullet that made them all panic. Our fifth and final election law case did not challenge the election of any single state. Instead, it raised a constitutional challenge to the Electoral Count Act itself. The Electoral Count Act was passed by Congress in 1887 and sought to alter the effect of the 12th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The 12th Amendment provides that in a disputed election, the vice president would shift the determination of the election to the House, where the House of Representatives chooses the president by one vote per state delegation. A fitting design, as House members are elected every 2 years and therefore subject to their constituents' viewpoints more directly than senators with 6-year terms. The Electoral Count Act shifted the determination of the election away from the House to a bicameral process. Under the 12th Amendment's one vote per state delegation in 2020, Republicans had a substantial lead with 27 states where Republicans outnumbered Democrats, 3 states where representation was tied, and 20 states where Democrats led. If the 12th Amendment applied, Trump may or may not have won outright, as some Republicans opposed him. However, as long as Biden were denied the majority of states, then Pence would have been the victor, and in either case, Biden would have properly been denied the presidency. Our case, Louis Gohmert et al. Applicants v. Michael R. Pence, that'd be Mike Pence, Vice President of the United States, challenged use of the Electoral Count Act as unconstitutional. Our filing was immediately brought to the attention of Nancy Pelosi, who sought to become party and oppose us. But Representatives McCarthy and Scalise opposed her in an internal House leadership vote. McCarthy and Scalise supported Gohmert and the application of the 12th Amendment. Republican leadership's opposition prevented Pelosi from being able to join as a party to the lawsuit. So instead, she was forced to file an amicus brief. That's friend of the court. Amicus, amiable, that kind of stuff. We filed for an injunction at SCOTUS on January 6th, the day of the electoral count. We filed electronically and had a congressman deliver the paper filing required by SCOTUS. That's Supreme Court of the United States. Right? The congressman was turned back by Capitol Hill police due to the unrest. We succeeded in getting the case docketed at 3:51 p.m. on January 6th. Given Pelosi's participation as amicus, she would receive notice of the Gohmert filing for an injunction with the Supreme Court. She would understand that Justice Alito could alone enter an injunction against the use of the Electoral Count Act because he is the circuit justice for Louis Gohmert's district. Abandoning any concern for mass COVID infection from the deplorables in the Capitol, Pelosi fired her political kill shot. She shockingly announced at 6:30 p.m., this is where it gets critical, she announced at 6:30 p.m. that members would resume the count at 8 p.m., just hours after Michael Byrd, that's Lieutenant Michael Byrd, killed Ashley Babbitt and demonstrators were still in the Capitol. While Vice President Mike Pence presided over the ceremony, curiously, it was Pelosi herself who announced counting would resume. At 8 o'clock, the process promptly resumed, objections failed to prevent Biden's election, and the joint session was dissolved by Pence at 3:44 a.m. Just my little injection here that both Pelosi and Pence put Biden in the White House. You know, so you want to talk about guilt, you want to talk about deep state, you want to talk about the geldings and the Marxists, that's how it happened. And this is why I say that they never properly finished that count. They only did Arizona, I think Pennsylvania for some reason, they're out of order. But so they should have gone from Arizona, they did Alabama, Arizona, and then they should have gone on to all, the you know, at least 48, possibly 40, you know, I don't know what it was, 47 states. But they didn't do the count. They didn't do what they're supposed to do. So January 6th was never finished. Pelosi calls him back into session and they say, okay, you know, everything's fine. Remember when, if you guys remember when Kelly Loeffler, the Georgia senator, you know, who was one of the strongest people saying, I oppose, you know, Biden, I oppose this, I'm going to challenge the election, yada, yada, yada. She runs back in the Senate, which I think met about an hour after the House. And she says, in the interest of the country, I have changed my mind and we need to do this to get on with life and get on with business and everything will be fine. And, you know, for calm and peace and all that kind of stuff. So she totally reversed her vote. That's why I think they had the talk. All right. So anyway, so let me get back to the article here. Since abandoning, while Vice President, okay, there we go. Notably, Pelosi's rush to restart at 8 p.m. did not prevent the process continuation to January 7th. This is what I've been saying the whole time, all right? Members could have gone home to rest and resume the vote early in the morning without losing a day. In other words, nothing would have changed regarding the date of the completion of the count. The absurdity of driving Congress to complete a process amidst such unrest was driven by something entirely different. Speaker Pelosi had to act quickly to prevent Justice Alito from enjoining application of the Electoral Count Act and throwing a big wrench in the Democrats' coup. All right, let me say that again. Speaker Pelosi had to act quickly to prevent Justice Alito from enjoining application, in other words, applying, of the Electoral Count Act and throwing a big wrench in the Democrats' coup. Democrats' coup. Let me say that again. Democrats' coup. That's what January 6th was a Democrat coup by Nancy Pelosi. All right. Last sentence. The next morning, with no comment, SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States, denied the injunction without prejudice, a rapid response as Pelosi had already beaten the court to it. Had Pelosi not rushed, the outcome of the case could have been different, and the president as well. Bianchi? Jane?
That's definite. But Kelly used her fear.
Of what? What was she afraid of?
Because of what happened let her emotions run wild. Because what was happening that day, I mean, you turn on the news and it was all over the news because of Trump. And, you know, she was just one of the sheep. And the sad thing is for her, if she would have stood up, they may have looked at things in Georgia a little bit different, too, for when her special election came around. Maybe then they would have made sure that there wasn't as much voter fraud. But you can't tell me that both of the Republicans lost in the second election. I don't think so. I think voter fraud continued. Voter fraud continued in California, and it's going to continue. Why? Because we have nobody with balls or nobody that wants to take a stand and say, this is not right. That is in office that can do something. There's no reason for this. All the Dominican all those voting machines should be outlawed. There's no reason for that. No.
Dominion.
Dominion. Sorry, not. Yeah, Dominion. And they need to go back to paper pencil ballots so you can go back and see exactly what someone voted for. No issue, no disparity. And you have to vote in person unless you really cannot get out of your home.
Pianki?
Amen.
She's good. You know, it's this makes a lot of sense. But what this says very clearly, and it really spells out what happened. Okay, now I didn't have all those details until I read the article about the Electoral Count Act, and it makes sense. So the Supreme Court, what they should have done is overridden that they should have acted, but they didn't because they're cowards, except for Alito and Clarence Thomas. So the only two decent judges on the Supreme Court right now.
Clarence Thomas
is wonderful. But why didn't they issue an injunction saying, no, wait a minute, this can't go forward. You haven't finished your work yet. You haven't finished your electoral count. You've still got 47, 48 states to go. You know, and where was Ted Cruz and Rand Paul? Why weren't they standing up and saying, no, this process cannot go forward? Why did the Republicans say we are not going back into session until we settle the January 6th electoral count and then had this issue go to Congress? They could have stopped it right there. Why did Mike Pence agree to it? You know, why did he agree to calling the Senate why was this a two-house process when it really is a one-house process based on state delegations? And I'd heard about that before this happened, before January 6th. A lot of people were talking about that. It's going to go to the House. It's going to go to the 12th Amendment, and the House is going to decide by state delegation. Trump's going to win. That's what should have happened, but they headed that off because she circumvented the Electoral Count Act challenge in the Supreme Court by calling Congress back into session while there was a, quote, insurrection going on. Well, if it was so dangerous, what were they doing back in session? Because people were still roaming around the building.
Right.
Okay? But she had to do that.
Make sure you put that up on your page.
Oh, I have several times. It's on my page. It's on the it's in the Action Radio group, which is public. Well, I'll put up in the Action Radio group again. I'll send it over. Yeah, no problem. We got Josie checking in, too, so let's get her in the conversation.
Let's tie something else into that.
Okay. Go for it.
We know that now – we just identified how great Clarence Thomas is, right?
Right.
Many of your blacks don't think he...
What's that?
Wait a minute. Think about this. Many of your blacks don't think he's great. Why? Then you have to look at 88% of blacks that voted for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
See, until that mismatch, that fact is corrected, where you have people that's thinking more along logical ways rather than emotions, and way they are persuaded, coerced into a line of thinking. We're always going to have these problems.
You know, it's funny because I never, when I was talking about Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, I never thought of Thomas as being black or Sam Alito as being white. That never even occurred to me. You know, it's interesting that, you know, for the most part, unless race is brought up and I have to deal with it, I really don't think about it. And I wish, you know, we have more folks that just, I mean, Clarence Thomas is a justice of the Supreme Court. I think of him as conservative. I think of him as way too quiet. I think he'd be a lot better an advocate for this country if he asked more questions and took more action like Sam Alito does. But, you know, the idea that, you know, the he's black and Alito's white, that it just never enters my mind until it's brought up, like you were talking about earlier. Anyway, I want to get Josie in the conversation here. All right, go ahead, finish. Follow-up. No, let's get Pianki's follow-up, and I'll get to you, Josie.
Well, one reason why you don't think that because it don't apply to you. Another reason why come he don't speak is because he grew up speaking Gullah from down there, what, in South Carolina? And people used to make fun of him when he was a kid because he has that accent.
Oh, he doesn't sound
from
black,
from
what you're saying?
Grew up in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why come he's so quiet.
Oh, because he does have traces of his accent?
He has traces of his accent, yes, his Gullah language.
I heard him speak. He doesn't, you know, maybe I'm not conscious of it as much.
Well, there's articles written about it where he makes those claims.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. That's too bad. Let's should write more. You know, write more articles, write more stuff. All right, let's get to Josie. Josie, welcome to the show today.
Well, bottom line, he almost did not make it to the Supreme Court because, first of all, blacks, they're supposed to be voting for Democrats, and he's not. So he almost didn't make it. The other thing I was going to say is this whole thing about January the 6th was well organized. 100% by the Democrats.
Oh, it's a coup. And, well, don't forget the Republicans, too. Don't forget the Republicans, because Mike Pence was in on it.
Yes.
He had several chances. Yes. He could have sent the electors back to the states, and he didn't.
For the next day.
Mike Pence is as guilty as anybody, more guilty than most, of putting Biden in, because he's deep state. And he's going to run again? It's laughable.
Yeah.
But no, this is a joint operation. Deep state Democrats,
but
deep state geldings.
Yeah. With what we know, I believe truly all this is well organized for them to fall and for them to do all this fraud and continue. But it's all going to come to an end, and we're going to expose them 100%. And we have evidence all the way from 2004 that they've been cheating in the election, and we are going to expose the Democrat Party once and for all.
Okay, when?
It's coming. We don't need Arizona. We don't need Wisconsin. We don't need Georgia. We really don't need anybody.
Yeah, we do.
But the reason we're allowing to do it, it's because we want to open the eyes of people that they've been blinded for so many years, because these people, they've been a fraud and cheating for so many years, and we didn't know that until Trump got hired by the military. So we are going to expose them. We have 100% evidence about the fraud in July. We have it in our hands.
Well, Sidney Powell just said that. Sidney Powell has the evidence, too. I mean, there's a lot of folks with the evidence. In fact, Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, went around to all the states in hearings and presented the evidence. They've got, thousands of affidavits. The evidence isn't the problem. The problem is the willpower to look at it. That's where the problem is.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you heard this on the news.
Them.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's something you might be interested to write. Write something source. What is this called again? RSBN. Right Station, Broadcast News, right? Anyway, they've got this thing here. Mike Lindell will bring election fraud case to Supreme Court to overturn 2020 election. Well, they're not overturning, they're correcting. Folks, Democrats and the deep state overturned the election. All right, let's see. This is like people who say President Biden. Anytime you say President Biden, you're acknowledging the coup as legitimate. Anytime you say Biden administration.
He's not a president.
I would say, I got a new term. I'm going to call him President Nobody.
No.
Because that's who he's president.
You're
nobody.
Right. He's not a president. He's a fraud.
He's not a president.
All
and
of
he's
them
not,
are a fraud. And
he's not consciously
and including
there.
Including a lot of Republicans are in it because they put Biden in it. A lot of Republicans are going to jail. Many,
well, I hope so.
Many
start
of them.
Start with Mike Pence.
Yeah.
You need to start with him. He was as corrupt as anybody.
I think, as much as I don't like Mike Pence now, I think he's part of the plan to drain the swamp. So
Mike Pence?
Coming,
no, he's not.
Yeah.
No, Mike Pence is the swamp.
I know.
Yeah, he is the swamp.
I know.
Don't put any faith in it.
See,
you got to get rid of party labels. Party labels mean nothing. There are Americans and there are globalists.
Uh-huh.
There are Marxists and geldings and patriots. there are very distinct groups. I mean, nationality doesn't mean as much as it used to. I wish it did. But what really counts, in fact, race really doesn't mean as much. It's really based on ideology. People use race, but what they're really saying is ideology. If you don't like a conservative black person because they're conservative, then it's not because they're black. The same thing. The ideology has taken over for race. In fact, the way they treated Larry Elder, they actually unblacked. Larry Elder. I made him a white supremacist.
It's
just fascinating.
It's
so
like,
listen to that debate.
It's like
me.
It's like me, Greg. I'm a Latina. So people assume
you are?
That I hate Donald Trump because I'm a Latina. You know what I mean? And I'm like, no. I love
you didn't
Donald
tell me
Trump,
you were Latina.
He's one of the best things.
Boy, nobody tells me anything.
Yeah, I am. So,
I'm having fun with you.
So people go, what? How could you do that? And I still have people, when I talk about Donald Trump, they're like, Why would you want to support that man? And
because you're an American.
I said, because if you knew the truth, you wouldn't be saying those words. I tell them,
Well, they assume that
it's corrupt.
That Latinas and Latinos are illegal aliens crossing the border who support all the other illegal aliens cross the border. They don't realize that we have a tradition in this country of former. Mexicans and Cubans and Hondurans and Guatemalans and Chileans and Argentinians and Venezuelans who are here in this country, and even Spanish, and they're all different, and they're different people with different views, even within their own nationality. And to say that, Hispanics have to vote as a bloc is as racist as it gets. And it's also ignorant. And, of course, racism and ignorance pretty much go hand in hand anyway. Even people who use racism, they think they're sophisticated, but they're really even more ignorant. All right, so here's the article. Mike Lindell will bring election fraud case to the Supreme Court to overturn 2020, and this is from yesterday, Right Side Broadcast News. The article says, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, who, of course, I'm trying to get on the show, revealed plans to take his election fraud case to the Supreme Court before Thanksgiving, which will mark roughly 1 year since the 2020 presidential overturning, they say, election. Lindell announced during Steve Bannon's war room on Tuesday that he will ensure the nation's highest court reviews his election fraud case, which seeks to challenge Joe Biden's tenure in office. President Nobody. So we get to hear Brian Glenn just announced, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, you know, basically said the same thing. Lindell reportedly filed a lawsuit alleging widespread voter fraud in the 2020 election this summer after he released documentaries, including Absolute Proof and How the Cyber Symposium, to substantiate his claims. So I don't know how he's going to do this. I think actually Sidney Powell has a better case with the Electoral Count Act, but I don't know what Lindell can do, how he's going to bring this case. He's not a state. I don't think, you know, he's got attorneys working with him, but, you know, what's the case? What's it called? Who is, they have to have an injured party. Who are they saying is the injured party? A lot of questions. I love Mike Dearly. I mean, I think he's doing a wonderful job, but my question is, how is he going to do it? And under what Supreme Court procedure is he actually going to bring this to the Supreme Court? I don't think he's going to have any more success than Texas. In fact, Texas should have had more success, quite honestly, than Mike Lindell did. What's happened on that? Okay.
I was going to say, I don't care who gets it to the court, someone mm-hmm. at least start. And I want to make a comment about what you were saying before with Pence and everybody
yeah.
else. You look Please at do. People in government, and it's a me, not we. And when you look at the United States, it's a we. Really, even when you have a good organization, it's not about me or I, it's about we, us.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Government.
Talk about that in the first hour. Yeah.
Most of the people in government just think about what's in it for them? What's in it for them? Don't even look at what's in it for their constituents, just what's in it for them. And that's a sad thing too. But
yeah.
I would say get anybody out there that's going to continue to keep this in the limelight, because sooner or later, the people that don't believe it, because there are still some that are just saying, it's just this conspiracy theory, it's just this or that, or it's just, you know, poor
Trump I hate that term.
Followers. Because, no, it's not. It's people. I mean, me, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I just want to know the truth. But also, I want people to do the right thing. And obviously, if it smells like a fish, it tastes like a fish, it is a fish. And they don't see it like that.
No, I really hate the term conspiracy theory, because it's used in such a derogatory fashion. It's used to dismiss people. It's like when Shelby called me right wing. The extreme right wing believes this. Well, I'm not the extreme right wing. Okay, the extreme right wing is anarchists. All right, I don't believe that. You know, so but it's guilt by association, and I don't like these dismissive terms. And I got after Dr. Pry about it. Got after Shelby about it. And it's just the whole idea of a conspiracy theory. Well, conspiracy is a criminal act where two or more people agree to do something. Okay. What makes you think that it's a theory, you know, and why does it have to be a theory, you know, and think everything's a theory until it's proven. All right. So that it's just one of those dismissive terms. I want to change the subject. We've got about 6 minutes left here. This is from Gateway Pundit. Uttar Pradesh, India, announces state is COVID-19 free, proving the effectiveness of deworming drug, quote, you know, ivermectin. We had a little controversy on my Facebook page. For those of you who watch, you know, the doings going on there, I made a post that says something to the effect of, it'll take me a minute to find it. But I was talking about, the reason, you don't take horse ivermectin is the same reason that you don't eat dog food. It's for animals. Okay. Everybody got after me. What are you? You're against ivermectin? No, I'm against ivermectin with horse products in it. There's human ivermectin, and there's horse ivermectin, or pig ivermectin, and deer ivermectin. Granted, they're the same. The ivermectin is the same. It's the same drug. You know, it's all the other junk that's thrown in. So don't go to your vet, and buy ivermectin, designed for your dog, because unless you know exactly what else is in it. But you get the pure stuff designed for people. It's different. But this huge thing got out there. What I was trying to illustrate was the difference that people who are saying ivermectin is only a drug for animals and saying if you take it, you're an idiot, are completely missing the point. In fact, everybody who posts on my Facebook page pretty much missed the point too. that you can get. That can there's, ivermectin designed for people. Yeah, go ahead, Jesse. Feel free.
Can I say ivermectin for horses comes in a paste.
Yeah.
You put it in, around the gums of the horses, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And ivermectin in pills, capsule, is for, depends on your weight.
Uh-huh.
They can give you a 5 milligram or 10 milligram if you're 160 pounds, and you can take two pills once a week for a month to help you after the vaccine to clear the poison in your system.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you have to take azithromycin and your vitamins too. And that's what a lot of people are starting to do right now with ivermectin, and excellent, excellent. And one of the RN nurse from the ER from one of the hospitals, local hospitals, he's telling us everything and everything that's going on. He said when he took hydroxychloroquine for the COVID that he had, he said it also helped him with his arthritis. He said now he doesn't have problem with his right hand, that he had a hard time with the IVs when he was trying to put them in, you know, and taking them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says right now, he said that hydroxychloroquine had helped his arthritis. He's like, wow, he couldn't believe it. So we have.
Well, that actually makes sense. It's an anti-inflammatory, right? Isn't that what it does? Isn't that what COVID and these diseases do? They inflame the organs and inflame the lungs and kick the immune system into high gear.
Lungs.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, the cytokine storm, isn't that an inflammatory reaction?
Yes.
Thing that kills people.
So we have an ER high qualified nurse, and also we have other friends in the ICU, and we're finding everything that's going on with the COVID. And one of the ICU 2 days ago, he told us the percentage of the COVID are going down and down and down, but they're not reporting it. He was telling us.
Oh no! I mean, we proclaimed here at Action Radio that it was over last July. A year ago, just passed. I mean, a year ago, 2020, it was done. And that they brought it back with the vaccines because, you know, COVID was basically over until the vaccines came out. And that's when all the variants showed up. Gee, I can put two and two together. They maintained the pandemic to sell vaccines. This is a marketing campaign. Anyway, let me give this article a little bit because it's kind of cool. Gateway Pundit previously reported that COVID cases are plummeting in India thanks to new rules that promote ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine to its massive population. The 33 districts in Uttar Pradesh, I should have my fake Indian accent, Uttar Pradesh, India, have now become free of COVID-19, government informed on Friday. Sorry, I shouldn't
sound
do that.
Like you,
sorry,
like
India.
You don't have no teeth talking.
Fine, we get some curry with our information. Very good. Okay, fine. Stop that, Greg. Yeah. So we have listeners. Sorry, India. We have listeners in India. I've just offended the entire nation. I'm sorry. Anyway.
That's cute.
But this is the thing. 33 districts have no COVID. Okay. The recovery rate has increased up to 98.7%. Let me say that again. The recovery rate has increased up to 98.7%. That's a whole lot more effective than your vaccines, which are like 60, you know, after you've had them for a few weeks. That's what keeps needing boosters. Why do you need boosters for a vaccine that's supposed to work? You know, obviously it doesn't work. I mean, anyway, we'll get into that later. But this is proving the effectiveness of ivermectin as part of the Uttar Pradesh COVID control model. Of course, the media won't mention that ivermectin is being used for the treatment of COVID-19. So it says the state, Uttar Pradesh, has an estimated population. It's like when I say Taliban, like Biden and Obama say Taliban. Anyway, the state has an estimated population of 241 million people. I can have my fun. We got a minute left. You know, that's what we do. We're a variety
show. You're
making
me laugh.
Okay, good. It is an estimated population of 241 million people. I sound like Dinesh D'Souza. He's going to get after me. He's going to yell at me. And then we'll get...
You're doing a good job.
Nikki Haley's going to get after me, too. All the folks here from India, they're going to hate me. Anyway, think about it. 240, we have 33 million, 330 million in the whole United States. These have 240 million... 241 million in a state within India. Anyway, this is the highest population in India. This is almost two-thirds of the United States population. Yeah, that's what I said. Okay. So what could the United States be doing wrong? Let's ask Dr. Fascist. All right. This is overall the state has a total of 199 active cases out of 241 million people. Are you ready? 199 active cases, while the positivity rate came down to less than 0.01%. The recovery rate, meanwhile, has improved to 98.7% as per the state's health bulletin. Uttar Pradesh reported only 11 new COVID-19 cases and zero deaths in the last 24 hours. Okay, so you got a population of 240 million. They've got 199 cases. Ivermectin works. Okay. So again, this is the first disease where the cure in the United States is illegal, and all of the deaths from COVID or with COVID or whatever they're calculating this as, they're all on Big Pharma, on Dr. Fascist, on the government, unfortunately on Trump, although he didn't know it. He's like negligently criminally involved. But Dr. Fascist is an absolute monster. And so this is the situation we have here. So now that we have a new Surgeon General here in Florida, I'm going to see if I can contact him and say, hey, dude, you know, I forgot his name. Anyway, I got a video on my page too. I'll post that to the Action Radio group. Let's see if we can nudge him into approving hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin at the state level. Wouldn't that be interesting? Josie, you want to give him a call too? New Surgeon General of Florida?
I'm excited about it. I heard him talking a little bit last night. Mm-hmm. He sounds awesome. And I don't care if he's from another country, but he's going to do good.
Yeah, we're from another country.
Yeah.
Both of us are from another country.
I'm saying him, you know.
Yeah, no. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Anyway, we got to go. We're out of time. We're
all right.
Josie, last word. Okay, thanks. There we go. Jean, Josie,
God
Bianchi.
Stay safe.
Don't take the vaccine. I'll play my PSA tomorrow. We're out of time today. Back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Sharing the show is sharing your freedom.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Gene.
Bye.